This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Three of the world's major religions have something to say about consumerism. Still, when it comes to talking about consumerism, many religious leaders are stumped. Members of congregations are proud of their material accomplishments, being able to buy a car, a house. Well, for members of the clergy, it can be difficult to know when is the time to congratulate and when is the time to say enough is enough. Today on The State of Things, we're talking about consumerism, our thirst for ever more material goods, through the prism of religion. We're joined in the studio by three religious leaders. Jen Feldman is rabbi at Chapel Hill Kehillah, a Reconstructionist Jewish community. Abdul Hafiz Wahid is an imam for Ar Razak Islamic Center in Durham and the Muslim Students Association at Duke University. And Monsignor Tim O'Connor is a pastor at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Raleigh. And I want to welcome you all to the program.
It's good to be here, Frank.
Well, thank you.
Wonderful to be here.
And we're welcoming your calls this hour. Our number today is a little different. You know, we're doing fundraising, so it's 888-1-888-472-3366. Now, that's a different number, so you might want to jot it down if you're a regular caller to the program. It's 1-888-472-3366. And we are taking your calls. Do you see the amount that we consume as a moral issue? Is consumerism a moral issue at all? If so, should religious leaders be addressing the issue, and how can they do it? 1-888-472-3366. So let me put the question to all of you. Do you see the path we're on as a nation that really sees it as a mandate to consume? It's how our economy is based. Are we headed in the wrong direction? Are we on the wrong path? Rabbi Jen?
You're asking a very broad question, mm-hmm. of course, and I think that always the question is one of balance and what our responsibilities are to each other in creating a just and a fair society and a just and a fair world. Certainly I can't speak for all of Judaism. It's obviously, like all of our traditions, a tradition of great breadth and depth. But in Judaism, certainly, we do not separate ourselves from the material world. We pray at the beginning of each month that we should have a parnasa tova, a good sense of sustenance and substance in our lives. But does that become the God, so to speak? Does that become the very driving force in how we are in the world, the acquisition of material goods? And the answer, of course, is no. In Judaism, we're taught that we release ourselves every week on the Sabbath from being enslaved in some ways to our appetites to change, create, control the world around us and accept that indeed the world is not ours, that it is a gift from God and that we need to become aware of that. So built into the cycle of the week in the Jewish tradition is this sense of releasing ourselves from that sense of control, of ownership, of acquisition, to simply be and to appreciate the gift of the natural world and our relationships around us.
Monsignor Tim?
I would say in the last several years, my reflection and approach to this whole topic has greatly changed. I had the opportunity 4 or 5 years ago to accept a challenge to take on a school in Guatemala of 200 girls who literally, the day we took over, didn't know where their next meal was coming from. And having made many trips to Guatemala, working with those 200 girls has drastically changed my outlook, you know, even though I've been a priest for many years and I've preached on this topic. Once I've really put myself in a third world country, it just made me come home a different person. And as people have said to me in my preaching, that it's come across how much you've been affected by your presence in Guatemala.
I want to follow up on that, but I want to hear from Imam Wahid first on the first question, and then we'll follow up.
First, Frank, we want to thank you and your staff for inviting us to share our perspective on this particular topic. As Rabbi Jen said, the major concern for us in Islam is balanced life. God has revealed to us through Muhammad the Prophet that we should seek with the means he has given us a home in the future, but don't be neglectful of our responsibilities in this material existence. So we have to create that balance. And I remember once talking to a friend of mine, and he said to me, he said, do you know what your share is of this material world? So I was quiet, and he responded. He said, your share is all that you can get and not leave the path of God.
And not relieve the path
not
of God.
Leave.
Not leave the path of God.
Right.
It's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Leave the path of God. So, Monsignor Tim, along those lines, when you say that you've been changed, and with this in mind, this notion of balance and remaining in the path of God, if you accept that, and you nodded as Imam Wahid shared the story, how do you preach that in a community that may not have been to Guatemala, may not have had that transforming experience you had?
Well, for me, it was coming back from the experience. It was, for us, it was Holy Week, where Christ celebrated the Passover with his disciples. And the story that I told was that just before I was leaving the school, one little girl came over and, you know, was trying to say something to me. And unfortunately, my Spanish was not the greatest then, and nor is it now. And she was saying something, and I asked the interpreter, what is she saying? And he said to me, just thank her, and later on I'll tell you. So in the drive to the airport, I tried three times to have the man tell me what the girl said. And he hesitated, and finally he said to me, she said to you, every night she went to bed crying because her stomach was empty. And she said, since your people and Our Lady of Lourdes Parish took on this school, she goes to bed every night thankful to God because of the people of your church. And I said, as we came to celebrate the Eucharist, I said, you know, here's the real presence of how we live the gospel faith. You know, and sometimes we can get caught up in ourselves that we're not even conscious that there are people like that, you know. And I cried through the service, and because it really was a conversion for me. And now everything I do, you know, whatever the meeting is, my first question is, how does this relate to the poor?
Mm-hmm. But Rabbi Jen, can we, again, if you accept this, how do you share this experience with people who haven't been to Guatemala, who haven't had the firsthand experience, and may have very different views about why people are poor?
Well, I think in different ways, all of our communities have been working within the local community. I know at the Cahila, we have a wonderful group of people that go to the shelter to help people on a weekly basis. Our bar and bat mitzvah students, as they're preparing for the coming of age and accepting the responsibilities of Jewish adulthood, you know, it's about living Jewishly. It's about living in a godly way. It's about bringing God's presence into the world through how we see the divine in each other and recognize our responsibility to feed, to clothe, to help others who do not have what we have.
Is it difficult to talk about this? Is the subject taboo?
No, sir. It's a very important subject, because if one human being is hurting, then the whole human race should feel the pain. But I think that, too, when we talk about poor, we have to also look at being able to help educate people on the God-given potential that lies in all of us to do better than we're doing. And I think a lot of times it has to do with education. In our religion, every morning when we get up, we hear the call to prayer. And it's really calling us to something that will make us more responsive to our responsibilities in the world. God says in the call, God is greater, God is greater. That's a call to us to make us conscious of the greatness of God and what God has given the human being, the possibilities it is putting to every human being's soul. And I think sometimes people are not made aware of this. And that's the greatest oppression in the life of man, when the human being is not being poor physically, but is being poor as it relates to knowing the God-given potential that you have.
What about the conflict in some of that teaching, though? The idea, you both suggested it, Imam Wahid, Rabbi Jen, the idea of Sabbath being a call back to a relationship to God, to realizing that we're not really responsible for all of this. We need one day to remember that this is a gift, a call to God every morning to remember, you know, where we came from. If that's not your perspective, if that's not your point of view, if all of these material possessions are God's way of saying, keep up the good work, then maybe we should work through Sunday. Maybe we should get a little jump on the day and not bother with that prayer because there's work to be done. Well, is that a problem in this culture? Is it hard to sell the idea?
I'm not fully understanding your question.
That there are those who would say, look, let's get busy and make hay, because that's God's will. God wants us to make money, to get stuff, and you know, taking time off on the Sabbath or taking time to pray is really getting in the way of my making a couple of bucks.
Well, within the Jewish tradition, that's not the message, you know, that you would receive. The whole Torah is really, the Torah in many ways, this is the five books of Moses, we refer to it as the Torah, the teaching or the direction, is not written for, it is written for the landowner. It is written for the one who has, and it is about one's, not desire, it's about one's responsibility to take care of those who are landless, who are widowed.
And I guess my question is, forgive me for interrupting, right, is this a harder message to sell in a society that believes that productivity is really God's way of saying, is God's way of showing a blessing rather than giving it back, waiting?
You know, certainly I do think that this is not the message that is coming to us from our dominant culture. But I think that people turn to religious community because they are, perhaps if they achieve those things, they ultimately do not give them the happiness or the peace or the sense of meaning and direction in their lives that is truly fulfilling. And so in my experience, people turn to religious community for an alternative message.
We are talking today with three religious leaders, and we're focusing on consumerism on the state of things. We're joined by Rabbi Jen Feldman of Chapel Hill, Kalila, Abdul Wahid of Ar-Razak Islamic Center in Durham, and Monsignor Tim O'Connor of Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Raleigh. Our number is 888-472-3366. It's a different number, 888-472-3366, to join the conversation. Stay with us. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Today we are joined by three members of the clergy, and we're talking about some thorny issues like consumerism, globalization, and the urge to make more money. We are joined by Rabbi Jen Feldman of Chapel Hill, Kalila, Abdul Wahid of Ar-Razak Islamic Center in Durham, and Monsignor Tim O'Connor of Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. And we're taking your calls at 888-472-3366, and I will point out that's not our usual number. So the number to join the conversation today is 888-472-3366. Before the break, Imam Wahid, we were talking a little bit about the concept of Sabbath and letting things go fallow for at least one day a week. That's a concept that is not part of Islam. Tell us a little bit
about
that.
We don't have what's traditionally known as a Sabbath. Today is our day of worship, Friday. We have what's called Jummah, which means to congregate, the big congregation. And on this day, God says in our scripture, he says, O you who believe, when the call is made and is proclaimed on Friday, hasten earnestly to the remembrance of your Lord and leave off business that is best for you if you knew. And when the prayer is finished, then may you disperse through the land and seek of the bounty of God and celebrate the praises of God often that you may prosper. So God wants us to have the consciousness to recognize him, and it's him that has given us all the bounties that we have. So Jummah for us, we're supposed to come there, hear a lecture, speech, that will give us the right sensitivities for our whole life. And we should leave there with more sense to go out and create more sense in the world so that we can help build a community for the human beings.
And what I hear you saying is that is done best if you can actually let it go for the time that you're there.
It's an obligation to let it go. Yeah. God says stop.
888-472-3366 is the number to call. Jeff is on the line from Durham. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I'm calling because I'm pretty disappointed in this discussion so far. I had high hopes. And we have representatives of three major religions there, Western religions, and so far all I've heard is generalisms about balance in your life and taking a day out of a Sabbath. There's no coherent sort of tough critique of our consumer culture at all. And in my experience, I come from a religious family. That's been the history of our religions. We sort of silent on the issue, and I'd like to hear something, you know, a little more coherent and a little tougher.
Well, let's get a response. All right, Jeff, thank you very much. Jeff senses that that may be part of the religion, but it's really not preached in a way that's meaningful and effective.
Well,
Monsignor Tim?
Well, I think his point is well taken, you know, and I think those of us who are in leadership need to listen like we're listening to him on the phone today to make sure that we are preaching authentically. And I look back to the remembrance now of Pope John Paul II, who was not afraid to say that over and over again as he went around the world visiting the church wherever he was, that he pointed out, you know, how wrong we were, the evil in our society, where those who have don't have a concern. We take on a philosophy that says, you know, I worked for this. This is my money. I'll do with it as I please. You know, the point that's being missed here is that we don't own any of this. We are stewards of God's creation. And that's got to be the theme over and over again to our communities of faith. So that for us it's Sunday, for somebody else it's Saturday or Friday. The day doesn't matter. The point is that when we do come together, you know, we need to be reminded over and over again, you know, what are we doing with what God has put in our hands to cultivate?
In the local congregations, not just from the Vatican, in the form of an encyclical that maybe not everybody in the congregation has read. This has to happen week after week.
That's right.
Is it happening? I mean, are we preaching against some of the dangers of owning too much, of not letting go?
I do that. Hopefully I'm doing it well, but I need remarks like Jeff is making to us to heighten it.
We do, but again, with a balance, because that's not the whole focus. We also have to be concerned about greed and how people are greedy and selfish. We have to be concerned about that. But on the same token, we're supposed to also be able to help educate these people who we're seeing suffering, who don't have the wherewithal at this time. Educate them so that they can dig down inside themselves and hit the goal that's lying in them so that they can come up and begin to be more responsible for their lives themselves. So it has to be a balance there.
Rabbi Jen, in the Jewish tradition, the prophetic tradition, right, is one of exile, of being very, very unpopular with not only the congregation, but also the royal consciousness, of taking on the royal consciousness at your peril. Mm-hmm. That's a prophetic tradition, and one that is certainly a strength of the Jewish tradition.
Certainly, and you know, on Yom Kippur, in the midst of the fasting, we read the words of the prophets that you are. It's not just the fast that one wants. It's the reaching out. It's the deeds. It's the reaching out to the poor and to the hungry. I do appreciate the caller's question. Certainly, I've heard that the job of clergy is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And to the extent that we help people to realize their responsibilities, to first of all, the recognition through both experience of putting people in the world with the Jewish eyes or the Catholic eyes or the whatever tradition we're coming from, to look at the world through the lens of justice. In Judaism, the word for charity is actually comes from tzedek. It comes from justice or righteousness. It's not something, again, that's about just a desire when I feel like it, I'll give, but one has a responsibility, an obligation to do so. And it's a constant reminding of people that what is theirs is ultimately on loan, and that when you have a bounty, it is upon you to share it with those who do not. So that helping people, again, to always preach the words of justice, of tzedek, of righteousness. What does it mean to build a righteous and just society?
Let's go to the phones again. Rhonda is on the line from Raleigh. Hello, Rhonda.
Hello.
You have a question or comment for us?
Yes. I may have missed this, but I don't understand why no one is talking about what you can do to help fix the problem. And, I mean, you can drive around in SUVs and support free trade policies that are damaging the planet and then give some money to the poor, but what good does that do? I mean, people, there are things that you can do. You can not be such a greedy consumer, don't support free trade, and buy things that are fair trade.
All right. Well, Rhonda, you actually raise an interesting question, and you may want to respond directly to that, but it strikes me that this is where the difficulty lies, that you as a minister, as a practicing clergy person, have to then almost weigh in on what becomes a political issue. Can you do that if you feel that you're authorized through Scripture, through your tradition, to say, you all can't own those SUVs. You're polluting the air. Can you get up in the pulpit and say that?
We've had some very spirited discussions at the Chapel of Kehla at our community around these issues. When we were developing our policy for how we were going to observe the dietary laws of Kashrut, we began exploring environmental, ecological issues, talking about buying only free trade coffee for our bagel shop on Sunday mornings. When we did an environmental program and several of our congregants actually ended up buying hybrid cars. We had actually a hybrid car. So we try to model it within the life of the community and then hope that it reaches outward into people's lives beyond the community.
I know, looking into my own church and into what we're doing, I challenge people. It's just not when a certain issue comes up, a tragedy or something. It's not just giving money, you know, because I think that, you know, for some people, here's a check, go do something with it. I really challenge people that they have to become involved, and the minute they do, they're going to see the difference. And hopefully that will begin the conversion in them concerning the things, the toys they feel that they have to have in society today. We're selling for less when we just, you know, write out a check for a cause. And I'm not afraid. I say it from the pulpit, you know, and if I make people uncomfortable, then I think I'm doing my job.
Can you run afoul of the hierarchy? Can there be complaints from the congregation that can cost you your job?
I'm not answering that one.
I can answer. I'm not the imam of the mosque, so I'm not restricted with what I can say. But I think it's important that leaders be able to give a whole picture, not just a bleak picture, but give the whole picture. And I mention education because it's very important. That's the first word that God revealed to Muhammad, was to read. And Muhammad was in a society that was known for its ignorance and its arrogance. It was known for its oppressing the human spirit. It was known for its oppressing women. But the first word that God revealed to Muhammad was to read, Iqra, meaning educate the world, educate the human being, because the most precious tool that God has given the poor man, the rich man, African man, Caucasian man, short, fat, the most precious tool is the human intellect. And if the human intellect is not educated, then that human being is then vulnerable to be oppressed by their own selves, by their own behavior. So education becomes extremely important. So we can, I wouldn't feel comfortable telling anybody, you can't buy SUV. That's their choice. They can make a choice. They want to buy SUV. That's their money. They could buy SUV. But if we educate them properly, the education will lead them in the right direction.
Well, there are those who would say, I'm getting a good education so I can earn a good living and make a lot of money.
And that's not bad. What's wrong with earning a good living, making a lot of money, so that you can help the humans? Like the rabbi mentioned, tzedakah. We have the same term in our religion, the tzedakah. It means to give from the heart. But if you don't have nothing to give, what can you give?
Are you preaching against, is this something that happens, the kind of preaching and the sort of thought that you preach happens on Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, and it absolutely, because it's not supported in the culture, has to be left, you know, at the church, at the temple, at the mosque.
No,
the teachings,
I don't
themselves,
believe that.
How do they get incorporated? And how do you, as clergy, help sort of folks incorporate these ideas the rest of the week?
Well, in the Catholic Church, you know, our gathering on Sundays, the readings are assigned. So it isn't that I flip through the Bible and choose the readings that I want. But in looking over the readings that are assigned to a given Sunday, it isn't necessary that you have to read something into it. I think it flows because it's God's plan that's unfolding. And obviously one week over another point might lend its way into, you know, really preaching on that point. I think what my colleagues here are saying is true. You take the spirit of what of what is being said in a passage, you know, and try to tell people how they apply that to their life. So one weekend it might be different from the other in terms of that of what I'm talking about. But over and over again, I think that balance, as we've been talking about here, the sense of stewardship, the sense of purification, which I think is what the fast is really all about, will lead people to that conversion.
Let's go to the phones again. Sue is on the line from Charlotte. Hello, Sue.
Hi. I had a point that I wanted to make. It was that, when I go shopping, I have to constantly ask myself, do I want it or do I need it? And if I just want it, then I don't buy it because I'm wasting the money that I earn that can be used elsewhere. And it may seem that this country is well off, but I'm over the road all the time, and I don't see it that way. There are a lot of people hurting in this country, and they're living, you know, they're hurting. You're really hurting.
Well, thank you, Sue, for that, and see if we can get a response to that, Iman.
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that the society has been manipulated by the commercial world. Commercials, it means just that. They want you to spend some commerce, and they have a way of manipulating that. And I think because of that, you have people that are just consuming, again, because people are not thinking about what they're doing. It's just an emotional response, and people just want it, so they go and get it. But at the same time, you go into a house, a poor person may have 15 pairs of sneakers, 7 coats, but this is supposed to be a poor person. Why? Because they have been affected by the consumer profitability.
And the notion, too, of surplus and shortage, I think, is sort of built into our economy, but it's not built into the faith. It strikes me that in all these faiths, what comes from God is abundance, and it's always there, and there's always more than enough. So you have, again, two traditions that are very different. If we take a look at the feeding in the desert, what happens to the chosen people in the desert, the food is there. It's plentiful, and this is seems to me antidote to the Egyptian theory of shortage and abundance, overabundance for some.
But upon entering the land, that relationship has changed, and the Israelites become an agricultural people who, through work, must and in partnership with God, receive their food. But then also, you know, as we had spoken before, the biblical laws are that the land there's every 7 years upon entering the land, every 7 years the land lies fallow as a recognition that the land is ultimately not the people's but belongs to God. So there's that, again, cycling back to that sense of recognizing God's presence.
And more radically, every 50 years, a jubilee, a complete forgiveness where everything returns to its original owner.
And all debts are relieved, and anyone who had had to, in order to survive, to sell their labor, essentially, is their selfhood is returned to them. Ensuring that a society does not become what we see increasingly happening in America, where all of the wealth is concentrated in the hands of a few, where you have a landowning class and a landless poor class. So the biblical tradition certainly had that built in. As it develops in the Jewish tradition, we still have the giving percentages of what we have to tzedakah.
But what's happened to this idea of jubilee? Is this one that is still actively pursued in the 21st century, or is this a sort of archaic form?
Jubilee itself, there were worked under a system also of tribal ownership of land. So as the tribal system no longer existed, the jubilee itself was that has kind of it's no longer being practiced in the same way. However, there still is in the land of Israel every 7 years people who observe, and on the 50th year, leaving either a field fallow on certain kibbutzim or giving a percentage of what they might get from a field to feed the hungry. So in that way, the spirit of the tradition is kept in the land of Israel.
Monsignor Tim, did the idea of jubilee carry over in the Christian tradition?
Yes, it has. As a matter of fact, in the year 2000, we just had the jubilee year. So, and for us, it's every 25 years. And Pope John Paul II, in initiating and calling us to the jubilee, you know, really asked us to let go of the debts that are owed in society. But the whole purpose behind that was to draw people closer to God and not the other way around. And that's really hard to break a tradition that I think has developed, you know, for many decades now, where one generation wants to say to the next, I want to give to my children what I didn't have. And I think each time we're taking that step, it's one step away from God, you know, with all these toys, you know, and what have you, that we feel that our kids have to have.
I assume that you may have preached this at one moment or another from the pulpit. What kind of response do you get from a sermon like that?
Often people come out and say, well, you know, you made me uncomfortable, you know. And I said, well, good, then I've accomplished my task. You know, now whether they actually go home and, you know, and realize that there's too much here and we're going to put a moratorium on this or not, you know, I don't know that. But, you know, I think part of our task is, as we heard, that was the role of the prophets. You know, nobody wants to be a prophet. If they do, they should be shot. You know, but if you know.
Or they will be, anyway.
Yeah. But the prophet is the one who has to say what nobody wants to hear, but yet we need to hear it.
Yeah. And can I just add, and the prophets, that they not only said, but they performed. Their behavior was a model example for the people. And the way that the prophets performed, lived, what they exemplified, has been able to change environments. We've seen change in environment. I mentioned Muhammad the prophet early on. That environment was a very chaotic environment. But through his example of excellence, was able to change that environment. So they not only spoke, but they also demonstrated with their life. And because what they have and the potential that God gave them is a potential, the same seed that's embodied in every human.
Thank you very much, Abdul Hafiz Wahid, Imam from Ar-Razak Islamic Center in Durham and the Muslim Students Association at Duke, Monsignor Tim O'Connor, pastor at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church in Raleigh, and Jen Feldman, the rabbi at the Chapel Hill Kalila, a Reconstructionist Jewish community. Thank you all very much for being with us. Coming up, a Raleigh poet recalls his days as a conscientious objector.